What's happening, everybody? Welcome to our Fight Network studios. This is Five Rounds. I am John Ramdean alongside my good pal Robin Black. Of course, there's a number of huge fight cards going down over the next number of weeks, number of months. UFC 206 happening right in our backyard. The new main event is Daniel Cormier is out. It's Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis for the interim featherweight championship of the world. We know Conor McGregor stripped of the title. No, he vacated the title, right? You're not even going to try to figure this out.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't
matter. Awesome fight there.
Awesome fight, awesome.
Whenever McGregor comes back, he'll have an awesome fight.
And that's, you know, when I look at those fights, it's like when you think of those four athletes, Conor, Jose, Holloway, and Pettis, just the amount of fights that those guys could have alone. The rematch with Conor and Pettis. The rematch with Aldo. Thinking about Pettis and Conor McGregor, or Pettis and Aldo. Holy cow.
So I don't think people – it's not natural for human beings. It is natural for us to resist big change. But big change happens all around us. We were talking off camera. There are five-year-olds who are capable of doing things that didn't exist when we were like 10 years ago, and change happens all the time. And I think this is a sign of kind of the last bit of all this, you know, oh man, the next one's a title shot, or who gets the next title shot, or oh, there's the interim belt, or he's got two belts. I think that whole structure will start to go to be less focused on. In the long run, you know, how many times is it, you know, number one contender bout number 600 where it doesn't mean much to you anymore? Is it number one contender bout number 1100? At some point, oh my God, the winner gets a title shot when they may or may not actually get one. Doesn't affect you that much. So we're getting people excited about weird, broad concepts. And I think it's something you mentioned is the future of network television and fighting is talking about the fighting. Mm-hmm. It's not talking about the rankings or an interim belt. It's the fights themselves. Just like people don't get pumped about the rankings of football in, you know, weekend number four. They're excited because their team is playing a really good team. And I think in the long run, that's where fighting will be one day.
I think it'll be a split because when I look at mixed martial arts, I look at it at that it's very different than every other sports entity out there. And one of the reasons where I think it thrives is because it's closer to pro wrestling than we think. And I think because that there's a whole audience that likes the what's next and who's in the rankings and that is still going to exist.
I think the
focus will be, you know what, let's talk about the fighting and what we saw and, you know, just all of the in-cage stuff. But I still think that in order for the sport to grow to NASCAR level in the U.S. or the NFL in North America, that there still has to be that element of the unknown.
Maybe. I mean, I guess the fact that we don't know who will win or who will lose and that will affect what happens next is a part of it. But I think I'm 95% sure. Anytime I talk about other sports, I can only be a certain percent sure because I actually don't watch them. But at the beginning of the year, you know who your team will play in football, like for the next 20 weekends or however many games there are. You know. It's like, oh, in 6 weeks they're playing.
Oh, this is the schedule.
Yeah, yeah. Your favorite team and my favorite team will play each other in 6 Sundays from now. Well, I'm still going to watch all the other ones, and we don't obsess over that. We go, okay, next weekend they're fighting Cleveland, or playing football. I mean, it's sort of fighting. Yeah, it's war, right?
It is. Did you see that Lorenzo Fertitta's kid?
Yeah.
That Nico Fertitta smoking that dude?
Holy smokes. Yeah, that's an athlete.
You can't say anything about him not pushing his kid into the deep end of the pool trying to keep him safe.
Yeah, when he's playing heavy-duty football. But yeah, we obsess over the distractions a lot, and I think that's in all areas of the world that we live in right now. I think we do obsess over distractions a lot. You know, this is a really tasty coffee, but, you know, how was it made, and what's this ice cube about it? You know, what's all of the different aspects? It's coffee. I mean, it's the coffee itself that matters, not where it came from or how much it cost or, you know, how it was shipped. But somehow with entertainment and sport, music and art, rather than focus on the song, we're way more concerned with where Jay-Z is right now and what his wife said and what kind of trouble happened and who, you know, were caught with a photo and all of this stuff. We spend a lot more time in those areas than we do with the music itself, and fighting is no different.
It's interesting that you say that, because I was off yesterday. My daughter wasn't feeling well, so I stayed at home with her. And, you know, I'm constantly going through the mixed martial arts world, see what people are saying. I'm trying to see what people are interested in. And there's this if you go use social media, Facebook, there's this addicted to the UFC.
Yeah.
So I was going through, and there's this list of, I'm paraphrasing, the most hated fighters in the UFC. And I'm like, well, I certainly have to check this list out to see why people feel the need.
Were you smoking weed?
I was not smoking weed. Yeah. I was vaporizing weed.
We're allowed to talk about it. Oh, we're in Canada. It's pretty much legal.
But so I was going through the list. Off the top of your head, who would you think would be, and this is, I guess, of all time, who would you think, including current fighters, would be the most hated fight? Now, this is there's hundreds and hundreds of posts. People express their opinions, so I went through them. Clearly, it's not scientific.
Now, you are proving the exact point that no matter how, you are obsessed with fighting.
Yeah.
But this distraction caught you probably for an hour.
It you know what I mean? 100%.
How many fights did you watch during this hour? You watched no fights. Did you watch any Josh Barnett fights while you were on this? No, it just.
Yesterday I watched a bunch of Uriah Faber fights.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I'm writing the script for this.
Where did you
special.
Watch the fights, and then in the middle of watching some, you were like, "Oh, most hated! I gotta see this."
No. This was a completely separate thing. I was doing this. It's like, "Oh, wait a second! I got to do some work now."
Yeah, get back. It's a distraction. Okay, so most hated. While we're on the topic, I'm gonna say.
I think earlier today, Tito. You said Tito to me, and I'm like, "Well, that makes sense, Tito Ortiz, because you know, old school fans. He was the guy that was the pro wrestler before a lot of these guys were pro wrestlers, so you could understand that." So Tito was on the honorable mention list, and I think it was more current fighters.
So, okay. Connor.
Connor was up there. He's one, and it makes sense why he would be at the top of that list. Yeah. But one of the ones, it's like, okay, who are some of these most hated fighters? And I'm scrolling through, and I read War Machine. And I'm like, oh, well, that makes sense.
Sure.
That War Machine.
He almost killed somebody, a beautiful young lady.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
So it makes sense. I'm like, okay, that's who's on this list.
So it'll be people like that.
Like this. And then I see Husamar Polyaris. I'm like, that just makes sense. The guy tries to hurt people. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand the entire sport tries to hurt people, but he tries to inflict damage.
He looks for, how can I go further than just what I'm allowed to do?
Yeah, exactly.
People?
And also, beside him, Yoel Romero. So it makes sense.
Now, it does. Yoel Romero will be hated because he pushes the envelope a little bit. Now, also, bear in mind, when people hate McGregor or some of these people, it is an aspect to them being successful.
Yes.
To be successful today is to also be hated, and to be hated helps you become more successful. And Yoel Romero is successful, and he's a star, and you can feel it.
Sure.
And when that's the case, you have more reason that people are more apt to hate you. And then you add to it that he grabs the fence and pours water
ice
all over himself.
And all that.
And I swear to God, that guy said, no, forget Jesus. It was a week after the thing had just happened, and later he's like, no, I said, no, forget Jesus. It's like, I'm pretty sure that guy was was actually a homophobe.
So when you say that, there are homosexuals that watch mixed martial arts. I hate that guy.
I'm a straight guy, just for the record. But also, yes, people who are gay friendly, like myself, or have
you have family members,
or friends. Yes, we'd be offended by that. Also, bear in mind, he did start off by going, what happened to you, America? What happened to you? Why are you? Like, he first berated them.
Yeah.
And then was like, don't forget Jesus. No, my friends. He berated them. And then he said.
So you're proving the point. Anyways, you can understand why people would not be a fan of Yoel Romero.
I once also became not a fan of Josh Thompson.
Right.
Remember, Josh Thompson came out.
He had some homophobic remarks.
He said that the reason he's not, that he is against gay marriage is because he's smart enough to realize that that's a slippery slope that will lead to people like marrying their goats and their computers and stuff. Which is just like the homophobe. Like,
he's just taking too many punches and kicks to the head,
but
I think.
Years later, you're like, he's probably just not that smart, and somebody convinced him of something stupid. Like, you grew up in a place where there were a lot of rednecks. Yeah.
Holy smokes.
You know, what kind of names did they call you? Because your dad's Jamaican. You know?
Trinidadian.
Sorry. Yeah. But I mean, do you blame them? On some level, they were taught.
I agree 100%.
Anyway, so back to the hating fighters.
So when I was going through this list, and again, War Machine, Romero, Paul Yeris, makes a lot of sense. You brought up Conor McGregor. That makes sense because he's a huge star. In order for you to be a huge star, you have to have a ton of supporters and you have to have a ton of detractors.
Yeah.
But the number one person on this list, again, I went through hundreds of posts. Number one, Michael Bisping.
Wow.
And you can understand if Conor McGregor's hated, Michael Bisping's the same as Conor McGregor.
Also, he's a huge star and he's one of the highest paid fighters in all of fighting.
Exactly.
And that, I think, would shock a lot of people. But highest paid fighter and most hated. You think those two things are independent of each other? They are connected. Deeply connected.
And then when I look at that, there was 42 people that hated Bisping, 31 people that hated McGregor. In between those two, Daniel Cormier, 40 people hate DC.
Why?
I just couldn't believe it.
He is such a teddy bear.
Yeah.
Like, it's first of all, I don't get – I mean, there is this one great crime that you can do that people may never forgive you for. And no, it isn't the guy who had a dogfighting ring because they forgave him. He plays football.
Yeah, I know.
It is begging for their love. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
It's like, why would you boo John Jones? Look, I'm the – nope. Dan,
can't do that.
Can't do that. I don't know why. People are weird, man. Dan is one of the nicest people I've met. I spent much of an afternoon with him down in Los Angeles, and he couldn't have been nicer.
Such a great dude.
We had him here. He's a really sweet guy. Everybody who knows him. When I was there, I was at Fox, and he brought... he drove into the valley to go get chicken for the team. And it's catered. Everybody that's working at Fox is catered. He went and got chicken in the valley for all the people he works with an hour each way because he likes them and he wanted them to try this awesome
chicken.
That's
super
cool. That's who Dan is.
Yeah.
They hate him.
And what's funny is I'm going through because you read the stuff about Conor. It's just pure insults. But for Cormier, there's no real reason why people hated him. So, like, there's some other ones that I had to laugh at. Like, there's one that said... I don't know why, but Kyle Noak has always annoyed me. I'm like, what?
Kyle Noak?
Another one, just Luke Bitchhold was another one. Glenn Howie, a Facebooker, says, and as I mentioned him before, Yoel, the soldier of cheating Romero, he is a human shit stain.
That seems excessive to me. You grab a fence or, you know, like, even the gay Jesus thing, like, shit stain seems a little harsh, in my opinion, just my opinion.
Chris Fox, and this really just sum things up. He says, I despise Ryan Bader for no real reason, just his face, I think. So you can see some of the people. I'll tell you, on that list, the honorable mentions, John Jones, Dominic Cruz, Brock Lesnar, Tito Ortiz. The ones that baffled me, Michael Bisping, 42, Daniel Cormier, 40, Conor McGregor, 31.
Now, those are three of the highest paid.
Three of the highest paid.
By the way, that's not a coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Also on that list, 12 people hating the Diaz brothers, Nick or Nate or both.
I cannot get with that.
I do not endorse that at all.
How could you hate the Diaz brothers?
Because there was one poster that said, Nick Diaz calls himself the best fighter of all time. The guy hasn't won a fight in like 3 years.
So what?
I know. They don't understand.
They don't get it.
Ronda Rousey also on that list. Tim Kennedy. Three people hate Tim Kennedy. You know what that means? Nobody gives a shit about Tim Kennedy.
But four people, because I know for some reason.
I don't hate him. Yeah. He just doesn't float my boat.
I have a book here that I was reading that coincidentally tied into what you are talking about. So. This, you gotta bear with me. So first of
all, what's the book?
The book is called Mastery.
Okay.
And it is sort of about how a lot of the things in your life is very much within your control. And whether I would recommend this to a fighter because a fighter is trying to not just learn to fight, but learn to master themselves. That's what, you know, Bruce talked about. Yeah. That's what, by the way, I have two Bruce Lee tattoos.
Yeah,
just in
so
case.
Yeah, it's, yeah, beautiful.
This one got colored.
It was Bruce Lee's birthday on Sunday, on the 27th.
Right. Yeah. So that's what Bruce talked about and many others. You're trying to master yourself. So, and what that's going to entail is, yes, I got to be able to throw combinations, but I've got to be able to understand fighting. I've got to be able to read people. I've got to be able to anticipate action. There's a lot of different things. And a lot of that, all of that can be learned. People learn it in any number of things. They learn it in life. They learn it by being, you're better at relationships than you were when you dated,
of course,
when you were 16, all of these things, right? And so, but so it started to talk about how in many eras of time, nobody could really pick what they want to do. you know, the elites or the power structure. You're born into the military, and I'm born into serfdom and so forth. And there is some of that going on today. There's areas of the world that you live in where people are like, why don't they, you know, pull up their bootstraps? There's not a lot of things you could do. Fighting might be one of them. To be a great fighter is to be able to learn better and to be able to make adaptations and improve on failure, all of that. It's all tied in. But so it was looking at the fact that today, just the internet alone means that you have the ability to study anything you want. If you have the internet, you can literally study anything. By the way, I told you I was going to – I audited a couple of chaos theory courses.
Yeah.
I didn't. That was way too far from me. But this book and things like that would teach me how far back you have to go so that
you can
understand
get to that.
I can't study fourth year medicine, but I can study pre-medicine, or it's, and if I don't know that, I can study grade 10 science or grade 11 and grade 12. And it's all logical. Yet less and less people actually go through their life figuring out what they'd like to do and then train hard towards a goal. Less people, despite the fact that we can all do it now. And there's a number of reasons for that. Distractions is a big one. But so it goes into this. This ties into the hate thing. So the idea has become that it's actually not cool to do that. There's something about that that feels old or weird or wrong. We've created the idea that going out and pursuing the kind of life that you want is wrong. And among the reasons why, so we live in a world that seems increasingly beyond our control. Our livelihoods are at the whim of globalized forces. The problems that we face, economic, environmental, and so on, cannot be solved by our individual actions. Our politicians are distant and unresponsive, etc. A natural response when people feel overwhelmed is to retreat into various forms of passivity. If we don't try too much in life, if we limit our circle of action, we can give ourselves the illusion of control.
To lower your expectations.
Exactly. The less we attempt, the less chance of failure. If we can make it look like we're really not responsible for our own fate, for what happens in our life, then our apparent powerlessness is more palatable. It's, hey, look, it's not my fault, man. I can't control this stuff. Right? It becomes easier. You have an excuse. For this reason, we become attracted to certain narratives. It's genetics that determines what people can do. We're just a product of our times. The individual is just a myth. Human behavior is just statistical trends. Many take this change in value a step further, giving their passivity a positive veneer, et cetera, et cetera. Then it goes on. So that kind of lays out why we might feel a certain way. Then it goes on to say that you can hate that when you see it. Right? So you look, you're sitting there going, instead of going, with the world at my fingertips, I could do anything I want. I just have to turn on the internet and I want to have a web-based business. Well, there's Etsy and there's eBay. I don't know how to do it. Well, take a course on how to do it. I don't know how to buy things, learn how to buy things. I don't know what. You just go and do it. Anyone can
do
it.
But it's the prerequisites, I think, that are terrifying for a lot of people. It's because I want to get to this point, though. All of this work, I need these prerequisites to make sure that I achieve success in my chosen
endeavor.
And
I might not succeed. So it creates the passivity.
Yeah.
But it goes a step further when you see it on display. Daniel Cormier went and gave himself the life that he wanted. Michael Bisping was a regular guy.
People hate that.
People don't like it because it's a reminder. So that's where some of the hate and
haters
our culture
hate.
Come from. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can.
It is going to be that way.
One out of 100 people can look at it and go, wait a second, I'm doing that out of envy. Why am I envious? Well, I'd like to have a life like that. Not necessarily being a professional fighter, but I'd like to do what I want to do.
But those 99 others are still going to hate.
Yeah, they will. But if two of them then do it, and then four of them, it becomes more normal. It becomes more obvious that you can't deny it and say, oh, it's beyond my control, man, and just, you know, get tangled in all the distractions. It's way more fun to, you know, just get drunk or play video games or, you know, be on all the social media things all the time instead of sort of just scheduling time to do those things. And it's way easier, and especially easier if you say it's not, you know, I don't have any control. And if you say you don't have any control, you then go, see, those guys got some kind of luck that I didn't get. Daniel Cormier literally had probably no luck. Now, everybody has good or there are things, good fortunes that happen. But what you do when they happen is what matters. The thousands, the tens of thousands, maybe the hundreds of thousands, depending on how many thousands it takes to make a year and et cetera, of hours that guy spent working.
Oh, God.
Working. Yeah, yeah. Nothing but work, work, work. Strive, fail, try again. Mm-hmm. That's what they hate. That's what they hate.
That's the prerequisites, though.
You have to do it. But if you want to go look and go, and this is completely like this, you'd be really in favor of. If you looked at something and said, okay, I admit that being a UFC fighter could be possibly achieved by training 25 hours a week for 10 years, starting when I'm 16. But that would mean that I won't party, and that would mean that I won't go on Tinder dates, and that would mean that I don't do all these other things, and I'll starve, and I can't do this other thing that'll make me more money.
And it's not guaranteed.
And it's still not guaranteed. Because I've looked at all that and admitted it.
Fuck that.
And I say, fuck that. Totally cool. Totally mm-hmm. cool. You can do that. Going to medical school is an achievable goal. Do I want to? No, fuck that. I'm not going to medical school. But I could go to medical school, and so could anybody. Now they.
I don't think I could.
Of course you could.
I think. Don't you have to have a certain capacity? Like, science has just never been my thing.
You go further back and learn the science that you didn't have. You go to a white belt, and if white belt isn't good, you go and you do some pre-work to like.
Aren't there certain endeavors that people are just incapable of doing?
Maybe, but there's not many. There's a lot less than we think. Mm. My wife's cousin was a goaltender in the university in Montreal, McGill.
McGill, yeah.
And I think he was a second or third string goaltender, and he was very good in hockey. And very smart kid. And he looked at it and he said, what are the chances of being drafted? Now, if I go and I don't date this really hot girl on my floor I want to date, and I don't go to any of these parties, and I let my grades suffer, and I take some other risks, and I pour it all into hockey, I figure, because he's smart, I figure realistically I got a 1 in 10 or a little better if I give it everything I have of getting drafted by the NHL. Am I willing to do that? He's like, absolutely not. I'm going to go become a school teacher, date that hot girl, play hockey in my spare time, do other things. And he assessed the possibilities in life and decided, no way. Totally cool.
Because he could be happy with that.
Yeah, because he looked at it. But if you just say, I am powerless, therefore I can't do anything, the world is unfair and I can't do anything about it, that's when you'll hate Conor McGregor. That's when you'll hate Ronda Rousey. That's when you'll hate Daniel Cormier. That's when you'll hate
Michael
Bisping.
So you don't think...
Erica's cousin that won't hate any of those guys.
Yeah, right.
Because he's admitted the risks that... And he probably admires them even more greatly. And every hockey player he watches now, because he knows, he intelligently assesses what it would take to get there and decided, wow, that's a crazy amount of work. Respect to those guys. I'm going to nail that girl on my floor. You know what I mean? Like, it's life. That's life. So if you hate Daniel Cormier because he took that road, if you know that road, you won't hate him for it. You'll admire him.
So you don't think that there's anybody out there that have achieved things and they're happy and that look at mixed martial arts and says, you know what? This is my outlet. I'm going to hate this British guy just for the sake of it because it's fun to do that.
Yeah, but not as many as the people who have achieved nothing. Mm. And because there's an envy and a frustration. And it's easy to understand. You can't judge those people. You're a few steps. Everybody's a few steps at every point from taking the steps necessary to see the world in a way that would be beneficial to them. But you need to find those steps, and not everybody's exposed to them. And, you know, people will often, not often, but every now and again, we get a lot of compliments for meandering, using fighting as our base of our conversations on these shows. And meandering, we've talked a lot about philosophy of fighting and philosophy of learning. And some weeks like this, we go way off, and I get people say, wow, that was really interesting. And other people are like, why are you talking about the fights, man? And the truth is, we're a 24-hour combat sports station that 8 hours a day we're talking about fighting. So if you and I get to hang out and dig through some of these things, we do it. But even having these conversations for me is partly out of hope that somebody will be like, oh, yeah, that does make sense. And if seven people go, you guys are idiots, you're talking nonsense, you don't understand, that's cool. But if like three others were like, you know, you gave me an idea, that would be really exciting.
And to me, it's just all the different moving parts in mixed martial arts or martial arts in general that it's just going to take a lifetime to understand, because not everybody, you and I were training with our friend Evan, and I trained Thai boxing at my school, but you're getting different philosophies from other coaches. So there's so many ideas out there that it's just impossible to try to process them all. So it's like all different mindsets. Like coming up, we have Joseph Benavidez taking on Henry Cejudo in Ultimate Fighter Season 24 finale. And one of the things I find fascinating, I look at Henry Cejudo as a lifetime martial artist. Mm-hmm. He's dedicated his life to the art of wrestling. Now, of course, he's a mixed martial artist. Joseph Benavidez, he told me personally, once he's done fighting, he's never stepping foot in a gym ever again. So this is just a way for him to make money. That is baffling to me. So it's all just the different people that are involved in the mixed martial arts game. Some come from the background of martial arts. Some come from what we didn't even realize growing up. Did you think that wrestling, collegiate wrestling, was a martial art? I never thought that. It wasn't taught to me, I was exposed to it
from some of the magazines and stuff, the Inside Karate. Those things we read. By the way, pull your mug out from behind your cup and go on this screen. I got John using the Rogan mug too. We're talking about philosophy. Why would Joe is a guy who commentates fighting?
Yeah,
and tells jokes.
Yeah,
but people watch his show because in the context of comedy, in the context of studying martial arts, he's found many lessons in his life that has shaped how he fathers and teaches and everything. And that's ultimately, I think, what we've been talking around the last few weeks is this idea. And when you look at, and now if you're on that kind of journey, eventually you start asking these bigger questions, whatever you study. And that brings us to Benavidez and Henry Cejudo. There's different ways that you can live your life. Mm-hmm. Now, both of these guys are rooted in hard work and growth and direction and becoming a better guy every day. But one of them, Benavidez, somewhere along it is like, I bet you anything. Now, you talk to him and he's like, this is what I do now. But I bet you he, and I've met a lot of guys like this, he loves being in the gym. Now, he may take a year off and go, oh, I kind of miss it. Or he might like getting fat because he hasn't done that. And it feels, there's an element to it that feels good the moment. Yeah. But I bet you he likes being in there with the guys. Because if he didn't, he wouldn't be able to be this good. I bet you he likes competition. He's a very driven guy who loves competition. Because you can't be the second best 125-pounder in the world without a driven passion.
Yeah, of course.
Right? And that book that I showed you, Mastery, early on in it, it's not a chapter that applies to me. It's talking about finding that thing that you would obsessively be curious about. I know what that is. We're doing it right now. I'm lucky enough to know what that is. But in doing that, you can apply it to other areas of your life. You don't just do one thing.
For Benavidez, then, the idea for him telling me that I'm not going to do this, is that because you have a belief that, hey, I know what I can achieve. I'm going to be the best 125-pound fighter in the world. You do all that work, you get there, and you fall short. So, okay, I'm going to make the necessary adjustments and do it again and become the 125-pound champion. You do that and it still doesn't work out for you. It's like, okay, maybe I'm not meant for this.
Yeah, well, it depends what your goals are. At this stage, that's his goal. And Cejudo was driven by that goal too. And he's probably going to lose his second fight in a row. That's just my estimation. Because partly, the thing that drove him to be a successful wrestler, you know, that desire to be a champion needs to be tempered by the realities that there's a whole spider web of fighting that I need to understand. Or else I'll never beat Demetrius Johnson. Going in and feeling confident and fighting Demetrius Johnson is wrong. Now, if somebody said you're going to make the real money, win or lose, this will be a great experience for you. How old is Cejudo?
30.
Yeah. You're 30. You're a smaller weight guy. You haven't sustained a ton of injuries. I think he's had neck injuries. A lot of wrestlers have.
Yeah, no
but
problem.
If you believe you can fight till 35, this
29.
Then you understand that? Great. Let's just take this fight and go for it. But if this is the shot, I mean, I will admire the next person who turns down a title fight against John Jones or Demetrius Johnson and says, I want three more fights and I want 3 years of development. I know where I'm going.
Now, do people do that?
Not much.
Because look, we've been told many times, it's like, well, all it takes is one takedown and my knee's fucked and then I don't ever get my title shot. So if it's, I know I'm not ready for it right now, but if I don't take it right now, it might not come in 2 years for a myriad of reasons.
So these are the realities that come along with any one of these journeys. So let's say through, as you're lining up your dominoes of this improvement, then that thing, then this has to happen, then, and you're getting better. And as you get better, what happens when you get better at something, there's the potential to get better in orders of magnitude. You've now improved a skill to such an ability, to such a level, that everything you do and all the information you acquire is faster and you can process it faster. Mm-hmm. That's why, and we'll use McGregor as the example, but there are many others, where you see somebody reach a new level. Now, when you reach a new level in your life, that will require a new you. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
That new you is now capable of other things. So if that planning that and charting it out and you're self-aware enough to say, and I'm going to need this skill and this and improve that. Also, Demetrius may be getting better, but I see he's slowing down because of age, whatever. And you make this estimation that in 2018, with the right two fights, you will be in a position to beat the best fighter in the world. Great. And then I introduce the idea that you might blow out your knee. Well, that's real. You know, or that this may change, or that some other guy pops up, or that a 22-year-old. Like, you have to adapt your travels and your plan and your route and your growth around those variables and realities. And they're real. And so when presented with that, most of us probably will say, well, I'll fight him now, even if I will fight to win with full commitment. If I do not win, I will have learned enough that will speed up my process. And you're probably right. And because of that, maybe we never will see somebody say, I'm not quite ready yet. But I think they say it often when they're asked early. Hey, are you ready to fight, you know, George St. Pierre? You know, give me two more. And you're not in a position to fight him anyways. There, nobody's offering you that fight. Then people go, give me two more years, I'll get better. It's always an admirable thing to see because fights are real. Fights are based on skill and who you are and your mental ability. And we have talked a lot at different times about the brain in fighting, but there are skills that your brain needs and they need to be right. If, you know, I'm working on a Cub Swanson Du Ho Choi breakdown right now, and Du Ho Choi analyzes, spots patterns, reads things, reads the play, anticipates what you're going to do and then executes you. What if he gets that wrong? What if you're good? What if you've built the skill to mislead him?
Yeah. That's cool.
You know what I mean?
Well, we're talking about this card, and one of the fighters on this card, Benavidez, Cejudo on the main event, Ryan Hall, Gray Maynard.
Yeah, that's an interesting fight.
Interesting fight to have Alexis Davis, Sarah McMahon on the card, Rob Font on the card. But there's one guy on this card that seems to, it feels like you have to embrace the journey. That if once you comprehend that it's a journey of experiences, and that I will take a fight against a 185-pound guy. Meanwhile, I'm 155 pounds. Is a guy like Jorge Masvidal, who really seems to live in the moment. He really embraces and enjoys the entire process of going through whatever division and learning just how to adapt to whatever. You know? Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
And it feels like there are not many of these guys in the world or in the UFC.
I saw him recently talking about fighting. It's like anybody who knows how good I am. And he's right. He's absolutely right. The people, coaches, other fighters, people with real knowledge about martial arts look at Jorge Masvidal and go, that's a top 1% of the 1%. He is in the 99th percentile of the best. And not of the whole thing, because most fighters are in the 99th percentile. He is just that unbelievably good and free and competent in every department.
The reason why I think, and then there's a lot of people out there would say, Robin, you're full of fucking shit. What the fuck are you talking about? I just watched Masvidal lose three times in his last five fights. Yeah, he beat Ross Pearson and he beat Cesar Ferreira. He's supposed to beat those guys. And he lost to Ally Aquinta, lost to Ben Henderson, he lost to Lorenz Larkin. He's not as good as you guys say he is.
Well, see, there are. This is something you can use in anything. There are lead measures and there are lag measures. Lag measures are things that you look at after the thing.
Right. And the loss. Yeah.
Win or loss, that's a lag measure. Yeah. That has absolutely
nothing to what happened.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
It has no bearing on the skill level of a fighter. Now, somebody will go, well, this guy's 0-10. Okay. All right. But if he fought Fedor, Arlovsky, you know, et cetera, you would go, the lag measure says he's 0-10. He's terrible.
Yeah.
He's the worst fighter. Then you look and go, he's fought 10 of the best fighters in the world. He's 21 years old, and he's amazing. The lag measure doesn't tell you anything. And when I'm the quickest, and use this, the quickest way to know that the person you're talking to knows nothing about fighting is when they bring up the record.
Yeah.
They bring up the record as a definitive part of the statement.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because every one of those losses are split decision losses.
And he thought he won all of them.
And one judge thought he won those fights as well.
Yeah. Against... So,
against
Ben Henderson.
Ben Henderson and Lorenz Larkin.
Oh, but I just saw Ben Henderson get beat by Michael Chandler.
And that's what it comes down to, is that people don't actually, they don't look at what has happened inside of the cage. Yeah. It's like the outcome is the most important thing. And why is that?
Because, there's a lot of reasons, but one is the culture that we have created here. Okay, what's next for you? Mm-hmm. Like, this thing happened. We, for the most part, 80-90% of all coverage and all perspective and all consumption of fighting is about the things that the fighters say and what's upcoming. Very, 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 and we've looked at this before. You're on Sherdog looking at their records. You go to the front page of their news, and I'm not picking on them. They're one of the greats, like Junkie, and mixedmartialarts.com. They're the pioneers. But if you read me those things, it'll be about Twitter and what somebody said and what somebody said about something. And philosophy is something that we talk about. Martial arts can lead you to the study of philosophy. This is philology. Philology is the study of words.
Wow, that's all it is.
And for the most part, that's the big crime that we are propagating on the consumers of fighting is that we're sitting around talking about words. We're sitting around talking about what the greatest martial artist in the world said. I don't give the slightest flying fuck what Demetrius Johnson has to say. I am not following him for his words. I'm following him for the genius, the magic, you know, of what he does. And the truth is, the part of the conversation will occasionally go to, wow, this helps promote the sport.
It's the pro wrestling angle. But it really is.
But it doesn't help to promote the sport, and I'll tell you why. Because you can get this if tomorrow you go on a website about Kanye. Or you go on a website about pro wrestling.
I want it about these guys, and that's what it is.
Or you go on a website about the Kardashians or Justin Bieber.
Yeah,
this happens. This doesn't have anything to do with fighting. It doesn't.
We've made it. It's just like I look at it as kind of a reality TV situation, and there's reality TV for singers and dancers, and for cooks, and for all of this thing. And this is as much as there is fighting. I look at there's this audience out there that love pro wrrestling, that grew up pro wrestling. It's like it's kind of kiddish. I need to see people get punched and kicked in the face, but I still love all that shit talk and all of the mic talk, because that's what you see in pro wrestling. So you can understand why there is an audience out there that is attached to the what's next and that guy's mad at you and that guy talks shit about you. You can understand that. Doesn't mean that we have to like it, but you can understand how there is an audience for that.
Yes, but I also see it as one of the great failures of our entire culture. When we talk to 100 people about the American election, and you take 50 of them, see this way and this way, none of them will talk about policy at all.
Yeah, I know.
None of them. Just like you'll sit in a thing, and I love meeting people who talk about fighting and stuff, but they'll always be like, do you think this guy's going to get the next title shot? Who cares?
But they do.
I know they do. They can. It can't be the only thing.
It's not. And that's our angle is we're trying to get a better handle on the combat and the growing world of in-cage fighting. But there is all this outside influence that has helped, bring the sport up to where it is. I think if we just keep doing our thing, as you pointed, eventually that'll be diminished.
Yes. And but even today, it becomes nearly impossible. Now, the fighting itself can be reflected in many ways. The actual technical things. This guy kicked this and this move like that, and how did he train it? But also other ways. It's, the view of how somebody, and I think sometimes we see some of this, the view of how somebody overcomes something is a life lesson. It's something to admire. You were losing and now you won. There are, things in the philosophical way that people study the martial arts. That's something we talked about a little bit today. There is how these fighters became so great and what challenges they face. Then when you bring in the realities of Twitter and the realities of getting attention in that context, it means a lot more. Conor McGregor understanding, or Chael or anyone that came before them, understanding the role that interacting with the audience played in how they did their job, that affects us. All of us have a job. how we interact with Twitter and other people and society as a whole and media and stuff, you have to do that without getting worse as a fighter. So when you connect it all to the fighting and the training and the combat itself and the study of it and the growth and stuff, it means a lot more than, you know, this guy said that guy's an idiot.
I agree.
On Twitter.
100%. We got to wrap things up here.
Was OSP on the hated list?
He wasn't. People just don't care enough. That's the thing. And he has my respect. Yeah. You know, to be able to do what he did against John Jones, come on. We all know he's not on that level, but he proved that signed to the dotted line and, you know, dealt with it in that fight and Jimmy Manoa. This weekend, the Tough 24 finale goes down next weekend. There are two back-to-back shows, Fight Night 101 or 106, and then UFC 206 the following night at the Air Canada Centre here in Toronto. On behalf of Robin Black, our producers, Chase and Suzanne, I'm John Ramdean. We'll see you guys next time.